Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Greenhorns, this is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers by young farmers. I am your host, entering citrus country. My name is Severin, and I am interviewing today Sarah Day Evans, who runs Appalachia Accelerator. And I got a hot tip that you were up to some good trouble, and I don't remember even who it was from because my memory is shot all to hell, but I'm happy to have you. Nice to have you on the show, Sarah Day.
Hey, Severin, nice to be here. You got that tip from David McConville, chair of the Buckminster Fuller Institute, and a good friend and mentor to me.
Oh, cool. Well, let's give them a plug while we're at it.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about, did you get a prize or something, or what happened?
No, David has just been a very important mentor and a trim tab, if you know what that is. Trim tab is a term that came out of, I think, Bucky, about just sort of like a leverage point to turn a ship in a small movement can make a big shift. And David showed up in my life in a way that really helped me to shift into this direction of focusing on supporting the regenerative economy in a more specific way than I had been.
So, okay, so Buckminster Fuller Institute is a really cool resource. We were a finalist last year for Agrarian Trust, and I think FarmHack applied for it again this next round. It's basically a very amazing institute that rewards social innovation, and what they mean by that is entrepreneurship, either business or nonprofit, that is working to shift the system. Bucky said, don't complain about what the system you're in. Build a new one that makes that system obsolete. Do you want to talk a little bit about how Accelerating Appalachia envisions the change?
Yeah, and envisions the system that they want to build? Yeah, so what we're elevating, accelerating, are the businesses that are aligning themselves with the biodiversity of our region in a more grounded and closer to just working more closely with nature. We just call them nature-based businesses, and they are either, you know, using regenerative practices or seeking to get there. And these are businesses that are specifically serving our basic needs of food, farming, food, clothing, wellness, and housing, shelter. So many of you may or may not know that Appalachia, especially southern and central Appalachia, is one of the most biodiverse regions in the world, depending on what you're measuring. If it's salamanders, it's the most biodiverse. The flora and fauna there are, again, it's all combined within the top five biodiverse regions in the world. And so it's...
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty amazing. And it has generated so much of the diversity in our a local economy. And when I speak of Appalachia, I'm talking the full region. There are 13 states. There are 420 counties. It's a huge swath from New York down to Georgia and down even into Mississippi. The region that I launched out of southern Appalachia, outside of Asheville, is particularly robust and abundant. There are such a diversity of botanicals there. We're home to Agaia Herbs, which is a big herb botanical wellness company. I think it has one of the most unparalleled food diversity regions. There are four... Yeah, go ahead. I could go on and on.
No, it's really nice to get you to go on and on about how biodiverse and the natural wealth of your region, because so much of what we, the rest of the country, we who think about Appalachia as a region, often think about mountaintop removal, mining yeah. companies, drug addiction, corporate monopoly, the railroads, the annihilation of ecosystems, and the sentimentality of loss.
Yeah.
And so for you to frame it in the opposite turn.
Well, it just is. I mean, I'm just talking about what's real and what's there.
Trying to use dollars into that.
Yeah. And so we actually are also...
What is your method?
Okay. I'm sorry. There was a delay.
No, don't be sorry.
Yeah, so I just couldn't... I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing. But let me tell you one other really awesome thing about it is that about 4 years ago, several anthropologists also identified that same region, southern and central. We're talking about North Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, as being the most diverse food shed in North America. And that is based on the number of heirloom seeds under cultivation. There are over 1,500 heirloom seeds under cultivation in that region. And it's not just because they can grow there because of its particular climate, elevation, latitude. It's also because of the history and the family generations, starting with the Cherokee, that have passed down that wisdom to save seeds and to cultivate seeds. So it's a combination of the diversity of the place and then the knowledge that's been passed down. And that really has sprung up this beautiful diversity of businesses and food, farming, fiber, forest products, botanicals, wellness. And I was seeing these businesses, and I was working actually at the time with the Department of Commerce and working to solve for some of the hardest hit counties in the region that had lost a lot of jobs through the industrial collapse of the furniture and textile and farming, tobacco, all those losses. But I saw all these like sprouts coming up, these beautiful small businesses, and was just so inspired that I wanted to figure out how to continue to help them. The program that I...
Wow, so you're one of those ladies who was sitting at those economic development desks just waiting for the understory to show its bravery.
Right. I mean, I've been working for 20 years across Appalachia, first in environmental protection and then in commerce. And then when the politics shifted in North Carolina in 2010, they came in and cut a lot of green and sustainable programs, and mine was one of them. And so I was unemployed. But it just didn't slow me down. Honestly, I was finding it difficult to solve the problems because of the structure of state and federal incentives are such that they dole out dollars, big dollars, for big industry if you're creating 100 jobs or more. But that just wasn't appropriate for our region, which is mountainous, which is geographically defined by small farms and small businesses. You can't have like a 10,000, 20,000, square foot facility so much. You can't have a 10,000-acre farm. Geography defines that. And so that that incentive just wasn't like a fit. And I even proposed at the time that we provide incentives to communities that were creating 100 jobs with 100 jobs with 50 businesses, you know, that had like two employees rather than one industry that had 100 jobs. You know, that the diversity, I just keep going back to diversity, is key in everything that we do. It's key in a sustainability, in a regenerative way, diversity in crops, diversity in economies. Any kind of mono economy or a monocrop is subject to blight. And that's exactly what we've been dealing with, was this blight of industries that were had collapsed and gone away and created this situation to begin with. So why don't we build something that incentivizes regenerative small businesses? And, you know, I was speaking to pretty much a system that was not hearing it. So I got to build this thing.
Yeah, so just to kind of clarify, well, two things. Number one thing is you have and had historically these extraction economies that really built the system and literally built the towns and built the city halls and built the libraries and built the roads, all for coal and mining. And now that those industries have slumped in some cases and in other cases are taking more mechanical means to an end and have less employment requirements, now in this slump, which is, there's lots of places with the slump. The slump is a widely characterizing framework for our economic predicament. And in that slump, you want to hasten the diversification and development of multiple kinds of small businesses. And that was just my summary statement. Then my new provocation statement is, while I was in England with the young farmers in England who are called the Land Workers Alliance, they were talking about some of their frustration with the common agricultural policy in Europe, which was putting down their its subsidies also more towards bigger players. And and interesting work that was being initiated in certain districts for cluster development and cluster proposals where, you know, a hackerspace or a solar workshop or a handicap therapy session, a therapy group would all work together and have a kind of a synergistic presence in a town working across sectors. And I know in Asheville, in Piedmont Biofuel, you have that. And I wonder if you could maybe talk about what that has meant for the place, for the community.
Yeah, let's talk about what it looks like. And so thank you for that. That's really cool. I love hearing about what you've what you're seeing there over in England. What our program looks like on the ground is functionally bring together a group of 10 to 12 of these regenerative businesses, and they go through a 12-week program with us and with each other. And there's a lot of strong peer support that is developed. And, again, reminding that these are businesses that are either, you know, providing our food or they are providing our shelter or they are providing our textiles, our natural or fiber farmers, and wellness botanicals. It's amazing how much they can overlap and support one another. That's as much as we have a curriculum. Yes, we go through all the pieces and parts of their business model, and then we infuse into that, like, you know, we go deep with them on whatever piece it is that they're struggling with. If it's their marketing or if it's their regenerative practices, how can they connect to more farmers who are using regenerative practices? How can we help them build more regenerative supply chains? Are they seeking investment? If they are, how can they connect to people that have similar values? Because, you know, the venture capital industry is pretty extractive. But you probably know there's also this other world of people who want to invest in good. And it's called impact investing. Not a pretty name, but that's what it's called currently. So all those pieces and parts.
You're almost like, it sounds like you're almost like a coach. I don't want to say social worker, but like a case worker. We're connectors.
Yeah. Absolutely, we're coaching them, we're connecting them. That's probably my greatest strength, is just I don't know, maybe it's just from having been around a good long while. And people seem to really like what we're doing, and a lot of people have come to the table. We have a huge network of just advisors, mentors, and impact investors, and it ranges from, you know, like people that want to just pool their funds and maybe put in 10K, or, you know, we work with Kiva. We work with so many different folks, or just a small group of folks that want to pull together and put in 25 or 50K. And then there's, like, the big funds, like Renewal Partners, you know, up in Canada, and they're doing minimum investments of $2 million. But, you know, this is, like, we try to just have that whole range of options available, but it's not at all a requirement to be in our program that you don't have to be seeking investment. A lot of businesses just want to bootstrap it. They don't want to take investment. And so just helping them make the connections to do that.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth-generation cheesemakers, combining old-world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds, delicious fresh cheese curds, or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's world champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com, and as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
And so you're providing all this pollination services,
right?
And connecting people and supporting people and probably encouraging and listening to sob stories. And
yeah.
But and that is basically being paid for as a nonprofit, or are you?
Yeah. So
of a, if you're not,
yeah, we're a nonprofit, but we also earn anywhere from a third to a half of our revenues, and actually we're seeking to earn more of those. We also had a contract with Warren Wilson College where we were working with the sustainable business students. That was just a limited contract, but it was great because the students got to come in and be part of this, and really some of them have gotten jobs with some of our businesses, and we still work some with Berea. But they had funding cuts there, like a lot of liberal arts colleges. Anyway, so we're now earning about a third of our revenues, and we're hoping to earn more by doing a revenue share with our businesses. What we're seeing is that about any from 80 to 90% of the businesses are actually doing well. And so and we've certainly helped in most cases. We can't help everyone. We try really hard, and we stick with them even after the 12-week program. I do. I just like, I can't quit you beautiful businesses, so I hang around and I pester them. But they, a lot of them are doing well, and so I'm like, well, Why don't we talk about a long-term revenue share with the businesses, because we get really invested in them, and they seem pretty good with it. So in other words, over like a 2 to 3 year period, we would get a small percentage of their revenues. And some aren't going to, you know, make it, but some are, and actually a good percentage of ours are. So,
figuring out how to be comfortable enough with the numbers underlying a business mm-hmm. to have confidence to improvise a payment structure that allows all the, you know, that pays the honeybee.
Yeah. It's not like we're taking an equity stake or anything. I'm not taking ownership in the business that forces a sale somewhere down the road. It's more just we're just sharing in, and continuing to support them. It's like we're just earning. We're earning our revenues through helping them as they develop.
Well, I could go down a bunny rabbit hole on this subject for a long time, but I felt like in our limited time, I want to make sure you have a chance to talk about what kinds of businesses specifically these are.
Yeah,
and
so glad, yes.
And especially in that textile. I know that all the hipsters are talking about their blue jeans are made in North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah, so there is some great examples of what these businesses look like. There is a malt house called Riverbend Malt House, so the only malt house in the Southeast for craft brewing and distilling. And they hire about 20 farmers, North Carolina, Kentucky, and Virginia. And those farmers are growing barley and rye. And so they've seen an incredible explosion of growth because of the demand for craft brewing and also now distilling. And I'm a native Kentuckian, and actually I'm in Kentucky now. So, by the way, we're in
both. You cannot not talk about bourbon.
Yeah, exactly. And I work with I'm working with the bourbon folks right now to help them. We've connected them to the malt house, who can provide them with a local source of malt. And they're working right now. The Riverbend Malt House is working to get a malt to the specifications of one of the big bourbon companies so that they can go deeper with their local and regional sourcing. I mean, they're here in Kentucky, but they're sourcing from way out in the Northwest. And at least start to edge in some of the support for, you know, farmers in this region. And then the other beautiful piece about this is that our businesses, because they are the customers of farmers, they can pass along the knowledge of holistic management to the farmers. And that's really that's a trim tab for us. That point, I couldn't emphasize it enough, is that our strategy, by helping these businesses that are farmers' customers, and we estimate we've got about 500 family farmers being supported by 35 businesses right now, that they can say, hey, you know, to their farmer, hey, we've got this great little booklet on holistic management. Would you like to take a look at it? And we have people in our network that teach holistic management, and if you want to learn more about using those land use techniques and practices, we can help you with that. So that's our way of being able to influence exponentially farmers, because I'm glad that, you know, Alan Savory, and there's folks out there doing the hubs and training farmers individually as they, you know, decide to sign up. But we've been at this with just helping to influence farmers, and there's an economic incentive because these businesses are their customers. So there's a malt house. Then there's Carolina Ground. It's a organic flour mill, also the only organic flour mill in the Southeast that's sourcing regionally. Don't get me wrong, there are other organic flour mills, but they source regionally. Her wheat is from North Carolina, Georgia, like maybe South Carolina. So, again, we're just honing in on regional supply chains. Then they're speaking of textiles. There is EcoView Fiber Mill, and she is the first fiber mill built in the Southeast, I think, in 40 years, and it's a gold LEED certified fiber mill. And she takes alpaca wools, and they turn them into, of course, yarn. So they're fiber processing. Smiling Hara Tempe, they've now launched a product called Hempe, which is absolutely off the chain. It is the best tempe I've ever had, and everybody, like, it's, like, amazing. So they're now using hemp seed, and we connected them to Kentucky farmers growing hemp because Kentucky, these guys got a permit early on to grow hemp. And so that whole connection from North Carolina to Kentucky has been really valuable for all involved in that. And Hempe is now on the shelves across the Southeast and the Midwest. So I'm, like, totally going to make a plug. Check out their Hempe. It's so amazing. And then our alpaca farm here, River Hill Ranch, and Bakwa brand is a ancient grain barley beverage. it's a replacement for all the Gatorade junk, you know, out there. This is an ancient grain tisane. It's a lemonade. It's a lemon barley drink that's been used since the ancient Greeks. It's amazing no one has started it there. We've got a chia company. They're the only chia being grown in north of the equator.
Whoa, they're growing chia in Appalachia?
Yep. Not just Appalachia, but the urban hubs. Let's get, I want to get clear around that, too. So, like, our reach is the urban hubs are important because this is often where these businesses are that are supporting farmers in rural regions. So this is an early blooming chia. It's non-GMO, and he's got some farmers growing it organically, some not. But its quality is really great because the quality control is very high compared to importing chia. And not to say there's not good importers, it's just, well, our quality control here is really high in the U.S. anyway, around imports.
You don't have to convince me. I've just been learning in the last radio episode about what a great proportion of rations that are fed to organic dairy animals and meat animals in the Northeast are fed from imported grain because the production of organic grain in the United States is so low, and that we've got to increase the production within our region. Wow, chia, that's so exciting.
Yeah, so are those enough examples? I could go on and on. I love these businesses so much.
No, this is great examples, and I feel like I want to give you the chance to synthesize but very quickly.
Okay.
What does this represent? This is a strategy for economic development. But development is a word that has meant many things to many people, and in some cases, totalitarian empire. But the development you're talking about, can you characterize the economy you're aiming for?
The economy I'm aiming for is entirely predicated around diversity of people, diversity of plants, a diverse economy, a diverse ecosystem is life. I mean, it's just that clear for me, and I think for others, that recognizing the wisdom of nature, which is, you know, we are part of nature. I mean, as Wendell said, you cannot separate, you can't heal the land apart from the people or the people apart from the land. And bell hooks, these are two people who are very important in my life, very good friends who I grew up with. And Bell has to say that social justice is ecological justice, and ecological justice is social justice. We are a part of nature. However, we've also become something of a parasite. And I'm like, is that the way that we're going to go? Is this how it's going to go? Or what's the alternative? And for me, it's more just been a discovery. Yes, I absolutely was fortunate to have a free-range childhood across Appalachia and experience a life in nature. My parents just let me go. And so that certainly I have that connection that I worry that some people don't get. And so, but this discovery, as I continue to move along, we move along through this program, the people that are showing up and what they're doing and the integrity with which they're doing it give me immense amounts of hope, and that we can't, just as Bucky said, it's building an economy that makes the old one obsolete, and that's what we are doing.
Wow. So if people want to become part of your cluster, and, you know, I could use a fairy godmother, pollinator, mentor, coach myself, but people who are in your area of service, how do they sign up and find you and access that?
Yeah. So they are, I mean, of course, we're on the usual social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter. I'm at Sarah Day, S-A-R-A-D-A-Y, at acceleratingappalachia.org. That info is on our website, acceleratingappalachia.org. You can follow us and like our follow our newsletter. I'm not big on sending out a ton of newsletters, maybe quarterly. And I will add that we're adding a new piece of curriculum. Our next session is going to be this summer. It'll be in Kentucky and Tennessee and North Carolina because we move it around. We take our 10 entrepreneurs and we hit the road. It's really fun. We get a lot of applications. We actually get applications from all over the globe. We're still trying to figure that one out. About 15% are from outside the country. But reach us at Sarah Day at acceleratingappalachia.org. We're excited about this curriculum because not only are we infusing holistic management, we're also adding diversity as an asset training because so many of our businesses are white, led by white folks. 75% of them are women, but we are working to help white folks understand the importance of diversity, and I'm talking about cultural diversity.
Wow. I'm really thankful for your work and grateful for your time and impressed with your vision and glad that there's ladies like you in the world. I wish there were ladies like you everywhere. And if you happen to be a lady who's listening who could be that kind of a lady and cash out of your other job and do
hell yes. It was really scary.
The time is now. We really need you. And we
really do. God, there are so many amazing women. Yes. I got to tell you, you've got so many folks that really care and really want to give back to community. So get on board with us.
And if you want to figure out a place to network with other such ladies and guys and people, the Bali conference would be a great place to start. Bali stands for Building Alliances for Local Living Economies, and they have a national conference where all these kinds of busybodies for good get together.
I'm a Bali fellow.
You are?
Yeah. So you didn't know that. BeALocalist.org.
BeALocalist.org. But anyway, I thank you. And
you're
everybody, please spread the word to your favorite aunties and nudge them. I think particularly now that lots of weird things are going to come down.
Yeah.
It's like it is exactly the right moment to disengage from the big stuff and
re-engage. We just have to unify in our regions and get those aunts and uncles on board. The woman that founded Bali, she's got a whole network up in Pennsylvania of aunts and uncles. That's what they do.
All right, everybody.
Folks.
Thank you for listening.
Please
order your almanac. Thank you for being so great.
Absolutely. Much love.
Much love. Bye-bye.
Bye.
for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.